Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Satchidananda is the nature of soul. You know, if someone says, okay, so describe who are you? Well, we know we're not the body. We began tonight there. We know we're not our careers. We know we're not the amount of money we make. We know we're not that all of that is just this intersection of time and space. As I said, you know, white American, middle-aged female, okay, that's not who I am. It's where my body has reached this intersection of time and space. So then who are we? Well, we are soul. We are consciousness. The nature of soul has these components. Truth. Right? Consciousness. Awareness. Bliss. But here's what's important. If you get stuck in the words, you're stuck in the mind. Doing too much of that with the semantics keeps us stuck in the thinking mind. Then I'm thinking truth, consciousness, bliss, truth, consciousness. Well, okay, well, here I am stuck in my brain. What does that feel like? I wonder what that feels like. And that's actually pulling me out of experience. The mind can think only about things. The mind functions in separation. It can look at a math problem and solve it. It can look at you and say, okay, about this high, about this old, about this weight, wearing this color shirt, this whatever it is. The mind can do that, subject, object. But soul breaks all that. Breaks all that. When we say there is nothing but soul, well then, it's all that exists. Which means, ironically, untruth, despair, right? When suddenly we're looking at infinity. Well, it's the darkness as well as the light. If not, you've just put a box around something that's infinite. So you see where you get a little bit stuck? You see where you get a little bit stuck with that? And this is why the path of Gyan Yoga, the path of using wisdom, using knowledge to get to God. It's an incredible path. It's a beautiful path. But this is where it's so difficult is as we are intellectually trying to understand, we're using the very organ that is keeping us separate. Using our brain. Using our mind. To think about soul is going to keep us stuck in the mind and not able to connect. And this is where what I would suggest on a personal level I mean, if you want to delve into the philosophy, sure. Delve into it, read about it, listen to it. But when you're meditating in your practice, make sure that you also have a practice in which it's just going in. Can you experience that state of infinite? The light that includes the darkness, but that, by including the darkness, dispels the darkness. Because the darkness can't actually exist where the light is. So it's not light to the exclusion of darkness. It's not bliss to the exclusion of despair. It's not the don't come near me with your bad mood because I'm in the middle of my, you know, Satchitananda experience and you're going to blow it for me. Right? That's how most of us are. I'm in the middle of my Satchitananda experience. Get your bad mood away. Or I can't go there. I can't do that because it's going to disturb my peace. I'm so shant. I'm experiencing this beautiful peace. Don't come near me. Don't talk to me. Right? That's not the highest goal. When we talk about the peace, when we talk about the bliss, it's not the bliss that says, I'm over here in my Satchitananda, so keep your despair outside. Don't come near me with your untruth because I am the truth. No. It's an expansion toward the infinite that has room for the darkness. And then as soon, and this is the beautiful part, as soon as the space is created for the darkness actually becomes light. Because as the darkness comes in, the light dispels it. It's the bliss that isn't afraid of despair. It's the bliss that's not pushing despair away, that creates the space for the experience of despair. And as that space is created, well, the experience of bliss in despair becomes possible. But it's not possible if I'm pushing despair away. And this is where in meditation we have to allow ourselves to let go of the intellectual concepts. Because if I'm going in with has to be bliss, has to be light, has to be this, then I'm going to, on my way down, I'm going to be pushing away in my own consciousness that which feels like darkness. And that's not the path. The path is, how can I be so light and so spacious that there's room for it all and it all becomes light? Not pushing anything away. Otherwise, it's not infinite. Otherwise, it's not consciousness. Otherwise, it's just my little spiritual box, and this is how I need it in order to stay peaceful. And you people better stay away, and I better not have to ever do that or go there or interact with these people, because then I don't feel peaceful. That's not where we're going. Okay? So you hold that as the awareness of this is the nature. But as I am going to experience it, what I'm looking for inside is an experience of expansion, an experience of infinite, an experience of breaking the borders and breaking the boundaries. Because otherwise what you get is this very shallow spirituality that paints over darkness with light rather than actually dispelling it, that paints over despair with bliss without actually dispelling it. And the problem with that is, like any volcano, like anything, it's going to come out because I haven't really transformed it. I've just pushed it away or painted over it. And when we're talking about the infinite, Purna, right? Purnamada, Purnamidam. Well, in that, Purna is everything, dark and light. bliss and despair, life and death. It's all there, or it's not porn. So we meditate on that.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. What determines the outcome of something? He said, sometimes we do something. People love it. They support us. Sometimes we do the exact same thing. People don't love us. They don't support us. Absolutely. This is where nothing happens in a vacuum. It's all about the intelligence and the motivation of what we're doing in that intersection of time and space, the intention of it. So if I say to you, is taking a knife and stabbing it in somebody's chest a good deed or a bad deed?
It depends
upon the situation. Exactly. Well, and, but more than that, it depends on who I am. If I'm a robber, it's a bad deed. If I'm a murderer, it's a bad deed. If I'm a doctor, it's a great deed. Somebody has just had a heart attack. They're on my operating table. They're going to die if I don't perform open heart surgery immediately. It's a great deed. Intention, exactly, exactly. And it's not even so much the outcome, because as a doctor, the man could die on my operating table. That's the karmic package he came in with. I may have done my absolute best, and I could still lose him. But what matters to the universe in terms of my karma is what I've done, not whether he lived or died. That's in God's hands. Similarly, if my intention was bad, I took a knife, I was mugging somebody to steal their things or to kill them. By God's grace, they didn't die, they lived. I'm going to still get the karmic fruit, as well as the fruit of the court of justice. You know, you asked about the divine court of justice. Well, in many ways, it's similar to the one we have here. The fact that the guy didn't die might absolve me of a murder charge, but it's not going to absolve me of the intent to murder charge. I could still be thrown away for the rest of my life, even though the guy is still alive, because I had an intention to murder him. Attempted murder is a serious felony. So it's not just the time, it's the whole situation, it's the whole intention. But also what you're realizing is societal norms and cultural norms. There are times that certain things are appropriate, places that certain things are appropriate, but this is where, if we get ourselves bogged down in people's approval, we're going to go crazy. If your intention is, I should make people happy, people should approve of me. Well, last week I did action A, everybody loved me, so I'm going to do action A again this week, but this week people don't support me. Well, I'm going to go crazy. If my highest goal is people's support, they supported me last week, they didn't support me this week, I'll go mad. Because there may be a reason that they changed, there also may not be a reason they changed. People are fickle. People were in one place one week, a different place a different week. And this is where what I do cannot be based on people's approval. It has to be based on my own internal, what Pooja Swamiji calls GPS. The only approval that should matter to us really is our parents when we're young, because they really do know best, especially when we're very young, our gurus and gods. As long as you're good with your guru and God, don't worry about what the rest of people say. Those are the two who really have your best interest at heart. Your highest interest at heart. Everybody else has got their own personal baggage. Whether they want something from you, or whether it's just, I'm in a good mood, I'm in a bad mood, it's a good day, it's a bad day, whatever it may be. But you cannot hook your own peace into other people's reactions. It has to be hooked only into my center, my core, my connection with God. Okay. Yes.
Do you believe in astrology?
Do I believe in astrology? Absolutely, I believe in astrology. I don't necessarily believe every astrologer. It's an important distinction. I believe in medicine doesn't mean I'm going to follow everybody who calls themselves a doctor. Astrology is a science, like medicine. Some people are really experts. Other people are quacks. This is true about almost every field. The issue with astrology is it's somewhat less easy to measure than regular medicine. You walk into a regular doctor, you've got a fever, you've got blood pressure, you've got cholesterol, you've got diabetes, you've got obesity. There's ways to measure you're improving, you're not improving, this is an infection, it's not an infection. We've got cultures, we've got all sorts of things we can do. With astrology, it's not quite so easy to measure. And so it tends to lend itself much more to everyone and their brother being an expert. Which is sad because it's taking advantage of people's faith and it's taking advantage of a science that really is a science. The only other point I would mention on that is, for me, the reason I believe in it is purely a scientific reason. If you've ever been on the ocean and you've experienced the difference between high tide and low tide, which you know can be many, many feet in places. I mean, there are places where high tide covers up 15, 20, 30 feet of sand or rocks or tide pools. It goes out and in low tide, there is an entire world that exists in tide pools or in the sand that isn't there in high tide. And I mention that because the ocean is huge. The volume of water in the ocean is enormous. And the thing that actually determines high tide and low tide is the pull of the moon. Astrologers can tell you high tide and low tide for the next 10 years based on the phases of the moon. So the pull, the gravitational pull of one moon on the ocean is enough to change that water from being non-existent to covering 30 feet. Well, the human body is pretty much water. And so for us to assume that that pull is strong enough to turn low tide into high tide and high tide into low tide, but it doesn't have any impact on the water in me? I mean, what we know is the smaller the container, the greater the impact. Right? If I shake this glass a little, it's going to splash all over. If I use the same amount of force and I shake a bucket, it's not going to pour out at all. If I use the same amount of force and I try to shake a lake, it's not going to budge. So we are actually impacted simply by virtue of the size of our container. A lot more, it means, even than the ocean. And so that magnetic pull is creating changes in our body. Not high tide, not low tide, but something. So I absolutely believe in it. I mean, that's the reason I believe in it. Is I've looked at the ocean. I know it works there. It's the most logical extension of that, knowing that we're also water, that it's also impacting us. But no, I don't believe many astrologers.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Two-part question. So part one, on the path of karma yoga, on the path of action, service, I'm here in the world. I'm going to use my body, use my time, use my talent, use my skills, use my abilities to serve. How during that can we always remember God? It's the great challenge, but it's also the great injunction. In the prayers that we sing every morning here, there's a beautiful line that says, Mukme Horam Naam, Ram Seva Hatme. May the name of God always be on our lips. But may the work of God always be in our hands. May those two things happen constantly and simultaneously. So that's the injunction. And the way to do it is most of us, as we're doing things, our mind is preoccupied, we can say. Our mind tends to be in the past or the future. Now, it may not necessarily always be 30 years past or 30 years future. It may be simply 5 minutes past. Oh my God, I can't believe that he said that to me. Can't believe she did that. I can't believe this happened. Can't believe he took my parking spot. That was so rude. Or maybe about ourselves. I can't believe I did that. You're so stupid. So the past. Or the future. Sometimes it's the 30 years down the line, what's going to happen to my children. Sometimes it's just, what's for lunch? When am I going to be done? When do we get there? When can I finally be done with this and do something else? I'm bored. What if this doesn't work out? What if I make a fool of myself? What if I fail? What if I can't figure it out? What if my computer crashes? I mean, everything. That's where most of our minds tend to be. And the problem is that A, our karma seva doesn't work very well because we're not being attentive. And B, we're not getting the spiritual benefit because our mind isn't there. You're getting some benefit. You're getting the punya. You're getting the karma, you know, the good karma from it. But you're not getting the real benefit of the transformation in the mind. When you're in love, and it doesn't have to be a romantic love. It could be love for your child. It could be love for your parent. It could be love for your best friend who's, you know, just come back after a long break, whatever. But when you're in love, you are always thinking about that person. Always. Pooja Swamiji says, you know, when you love someone, you don't have to take the mala and say, you know, Jyoti, 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 Jyoti. You're always thinking her name anyway. We do the puja because we're not thinking about God. I have to sit and do my japa because if I don't sit and do my japa, I'm going to forget to take God's name because I'm not in love enough. When you're really in love, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You're always thinking about that person. You're driving to work, you're in work, you're taking a shower, you're cooking food, you're eating food. You're always thinking about that person. And so the key is, how can my relationship with God develop in such a way that whatever I'm doing, I'm always thinking about God? And it's not easy. We don't all have direct personal relationships with God. One of the ways to do this, if you don't yet have that relationship, or if that's not something that comes naturally, is if you're serving, can you see God in those you're serving? So whatever I may be doing, can I see God in those I'm working with, in those I'm working for, in those my work will benefit? Because that's another way to always have God in my mind. If every time my boss comes in and yells at me or calls me into his office to yell at me, my focus is, how can I see God in my really cranky boss? Well, okay, I may not be 100% successful in doing it, but at least it's brought God into my brain. At least I'm trying. Whether I can see God in my boss or not, my mind is at least now thinking about God. Can I see boss in my coworkers? You know, in the one in the next cubicle who's always on the phone too loud, you know, who's got the music up too loud, you can hear it through her earphones, you know, whatever it may be. Can I start to see God in all of them? And again, it's not easy, but at least the mere practice of doing it puts God in your brain. The only way to think about God is not, in the form of Krishna or in the form of Ram or in the form of Shiva or in the form of the goddess. You can also think about God in the form of all of the divine creation. We're told by God, I am in everyone. All of the creation is pervaded by the divine. The Upanishads tell us that. So, whatever form you can see God in, try to focus on that. And again, even if you're not successful, don't worry, because this is a practice where simply trying to do it is actually enough. Because simply trying to do it puts God in your brain. You know you're supposed to be seeing God in your boss. Well, at least now you're thinking about God. Rather than thinking about, oh my God, what a witch. You know, like, I can't believe, how did I get stuck with this job? If, you know, my wife didn't insist on such a big house, we wouldn't have such a big mortgage, and then I wouldn't have to have this stupid job, and, you know, it's not fair. And so that's where most of our minds go. Useless. Gets us absolutely nowhere on the path of life. So at least in that moment, thinking about God. Having a mantra is a another very good tool, because what happens as you chant your mantra is the mantra starts to chant itself. In the beginning, you always have to remind yourself, chant the mantra. But as you do it, the mantra starts chanting itself. And it requires much less attention to bring it back when you've lost it. And so you find that no matter what you're doing, the mantra's on. And so that's another very good way to always keep the mind on God. And lastly, you know, just like in meditation, so you sit down to meditate. It's not because we don't always have a wandering mind while we're doing karma yoga. We have a wandering mind sitting and meditating. Eyes are closed, room is dark. Phone is off. Mind is on. I don't need the noise of the outer world to disturb me, to take me away from God. And just as in meditation, mind wanders, you bring it back. Wanders again, bring it back. Wanders again, you bring it back. And slowly, the time it takes for you to bring it back gets shorter. The time in between its wanderings gets longer and more beautiful. But we just start using that practice in our life. You know, you find yourself in a situation, you're upset, you're angry, your ego's taken over, your fear's taken over. All right, then suddenly something in your mind and your conscience, Wait, I'm supposed to be thinking about God. Oh, yeah. You bring it back. And just like meditation, slowly, that happens to you quicker and quicker. So it's not like you're 5 hours into a tirade before you remember that you're supposed to be thinking about God. Maybe you're 5 words into it. 5 seconds into it, 5 minutes into it. Wait. Sorry. Lost myself. Slowly keep bringing it back. And then, of course, as more and more space is created, because it's not being so full of your past and your future and your anxiety and your ego, there's more space for God to exist in you. And that's what all this practice is creating the space. Creating the space. The divine is there. It's all around. It's in us. It's everywhere. But when we're so full of our own egos, of our own attachments, of our own identities, of all of that stuff, it prevents the grace from flowing because there's no room. where you get a spiritual heart attack. You know, I mean, literally, a regular heart attack is the blood vessels are too full of plaque and no room for the blood to flow. So you have a heart attack. Same thing happens. Our internal channel gets so full of the plaque of our own egos that there's no room for grace to flow. And that brings us into your second question about the monkey mind and what to do about it. Just keep bringing it back. Don't hate it. Don't yell at it, because all that does is give it extra energy. I'll tell you my favorite story about this. It's a true story. So in our international yoga festival every year, we have about 5 or 6 different venues of things happening simultaneously, because there's, you know, this year we had 2,000 people from 100 countries. So you can't get everybody into one class. So we have 5 or 6 things happening simultaneously. And one of the venues is a big tent that we put up in the garden. So I was in the tent teaching meditation in the afternoon. And for some reason, the monkeys are, the real monkeys, are not just the ones in our mind, the real monkeys, are much, much more active in the afternoon than in the mornings. You go there in the morning, you may not find any monkeys. In the afternoon, they're all over the place. So I was teaching an afternoon meditation, and slowly, 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 these sounds started coming, and you'd hear like, and you could see the cloth that they had done the top of the tent with. Monkeys had jumped onto the roof of the tent from the outside and were jumping around playing on the top of the tent, and it was pushing the cloth of the tent, which is, you know, some kind of vinyl or something that makes that noise, against each other down, and so it was making this like noise of the tent. Now, it was slightly annoying, but not horrible. Yes, it drew your attention. Every time it went, you knew. And then every once in a while, one of the monkeys would stick its hand in, and somebody in the group who maybe his eyes weren't closed opened it, saw it, they started to laugh. Maybe they poked the person next to them, and, you know, you'd see hands of the monkey coming down. So maybe it was the camera guy who started laughing, but slowly, slowly, people would start to giggle. But then we'd come back. And it just took me to re-remind people, okay, return the awareness inward, bring the awareness back, and come back. Just took a few seconds. Then another several minutes later, there'd be, again, people would get distracted. Again, we'd bring them back. But after this going on for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, one of the guards, the security guards, who was hired, and one of their jobs being keep the monkeys away, took his big stick and started banging on the poles that hold the tent up in order to scare off the monkeys. And so suddenly, instead of just, you heard bam, 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 bam. Now, it was no longer possible to meditate. This was steel on steel. And of course, the guard has to yell with it, you know. Okay, so now it was just, there was no point saying, just keep bringing the awareness back. when the flow was clearly running downstream so strongly, there was just no point in trying to row the boat in the other direction. But it gave us actually a wonderful, wonderful illustration, and I've loved it to this day. Even though it was not what I had intended for the afternoon meditation session, I'm so grateful for it, because this is what happens in meditation. There they were real monkeys, but usually it's just the monkey in the mind. Now what happens normally is the monkey plays. It has a thought. It has a memory. It has a something. And you have this small metaphoric in the mind. It's a thought. It's an idea. It's a memory. It's a feeling. It's an itchy foot. It's a rumbling stomach. Whatever it may be that just pulls you away from your meditation for a moment. But then you come back and it's okay. But when the inner guard gets fed up with the monkey mind and starts yelling at it, oh, you'll never be able to meditate. You're a failure at this too. Your mind doesn't stop. For God's sakes, why doesn't this mind stop? Go away. I hate you. Whatever we yell at ourselves, that's when meditation becomes impossible. And so the illustration that was given so beautifully is the monkey themselves are not nearly as much of a problem as that inner security guard bang, 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 banging to try to get the monkeys to go away. And so we don't berate ourselves. We don't yell. We don't push them. We don't wage war against our thoughts or against our mind. We just keep bringing it back. And you know what? Eventually, they jump off the roof and they go away. Maybe they come back tomorrow afternoon, but for a while, they're gone. And you have a beautiful extended experience of meditation. Then maybe one comes back, and then he goes away. And you just keep bringing the mind back, but you don't allow it to hook onto the monkey. It's not, oh, there he is in the back of my mind, now the middle of the mind, now the front of the mind, now it's, you know, my past, now my future, now my distant future, now my child's future, now my grandchild, my unborn grandchild's future, right? We hook on and we just keep going and going and going and going. And that's what not to do. You don't want to find yourself on the roof with the monkey. You're here. Just bring it back. Bring it back. Bring it back. Be aware. Be aware. All right. Distracted. It's okay. Bring it back.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. The chatter in the head starts to determine how I live. What I've done is I've turned over everything that matters to the most insane, intoxicated, not spiritually intoxicated, but like on drugs intoxicated, dictator on earth. Because that's what the mind does. At its best, it's just a random drugged out monkey. Can't quite figure out where to sit. Little here, little there, swing here, swing there. That's the mind, the regular mind at its best. At its worst, it's running a constant commentary. How dare you say that? Why did you say that? That was so stupid. What are people going to think? Or, oh, of course, absolutely. The chatter of the mind, and this is where we're coming to. The whole point is to rise beyond that. But if I say the chatter in my mind is going to determine my practice. So for example, I'm not going to practice this because I have chatter in my mind. Or I can't do my japa because I have chatter in my mind. What I'm doing is literally handing over the keys to my spiritual life, everything that matters, to this crazed, drugged out dictator monkey in my brain. Through our spiritual practice, and by the way, what I was saying is, in addition to the monkey, we also have this commentary that runs that's not nearly as random, not nearly as frenetic, that's much more insidiously calculated. And it's the voice that says, you're stupid, you're never going to get this, you're worthless. Or the opposite end of the spectrum, you're so smart and great, these other people are stupid. Either way, it's the same game, it's the ego on both ends of the spectrum. Through our spiritual practice, the chatter in the mind stills. As the chatter in the mind stills, we become much more able to do all of our spiritual practice, whether it's closed eyes meditation, open eye meditation, practicing chanting our mantra, practicing seeing people as divine, practicing no reaction, all of these practices that we have, they all work and are possible only when there's some semblance of ability for me to work with my mind. If I'm going to let the chatter in my mind run rampant, I'm not going to be able to do anything. So all of my spiritual practice that is about stilling the mind runs simultaneous to, it's not one or the other, because you also don't want to say, once I've stilled my mind as a prerequisite, then I will do these things, because that'll also never happen. You'll gain control. It'll become stiller. The chatter will get less and less. The space between the chatter will get longer and longer. The chatter will get quieter and quieter. But it's a product of the mind that we have until and unless it's enlightened. We, as we identify, the self we identify as is a product of the chatter. The chatter is a product also of the self we identify. So I'll give you an example, a simple example. You grow up, you've got an older sister. And I'm hypothetical situation. You grow up, you've got an older sister. She's brilliant. She's beautiful. She's brilliant. Okay? You're 2 years, 3 years, 4 years younger than she is, let's say. As you go through school, wherever you go, you are constantly walking in her footsteps. And everybody says to you, why can't you be like your sister? Now, due to the genetic play, you're not quite as physically attractive as she is. And studies don't come quite as easily to you as they do to her. But what starts happening at a very, very early age is you decide, I'm not good enough. People tell you you're not good enough. They don't mean to. They're not trying to be mean. They just say silly things. God, you know, your sister could do it. Why can't you? Your sister got A's. Why are you getting C's? Oh, I remember when I had your sister in my class. God, she was so wonderful and beautiful. You know, these things that are so seemingly harmless, but really plant the seeds in people. And this is just one of 10 billion possible examples, but I wanted to keep it simple for a reason. So now your mind, from the time you're tiny in school, starts saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not the smart one, I'm the stupid one, I'm the ugly one. Now, even the skills that you do have, because of course they're different than what she has, but you too have come into this world with a full, beautiful package. But you don't even have the inner drive to explore them, because you've got this identity of the not pretty enough sister, the not smart enough sister, the not good enough sister. Now, as that works in your mind, it is creating you. That mental chatter in your mind creates you. Maybe at a young age you decide, well, forget it, I can't be her, so what's the point? I might as well not take care of myself. I might as well eat lots and lots of junk food. I mean, if I can't be as pretty as she is, what's the point of even, like, taking care of myself? You become overweight. You become sick. You stop, you know, whatever it may be. You stop trying in school. What's the point? I'll never be as smart as she was. Now, the things that actually you have, that if you had been born, say, in a different family or in a different environment that hadn't compared you constantly like that to her, those things would have flourished. But in this particular situation, instead, the chatter of the mind created your reality now, which is someone who has made herself even less physically attractive, someone who has not even tried in school, someone who has given up, who gave up when she was a young child. So it works both ways. The situation we are in leads to the chatter. I'm the younger sister. I had this older sister. She was smart and beautiful. That was my external situation. That gave birth to the chatter in my mind, based on the feedback I got from parents and teachers and everyone. That feedback became the voice in my own head. That voice in my own head created my identity. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.